This is Speaker Newt Gingrich, and I'm listening to Paying Attention with Tom Duggan on WCAP, where everybody gets it.
He carried a gun for good to protect the rest of us. You carried a gun because you were a street terrorist, and that's what you are. It is incumbent upon the court to impose the sentence of death. That is all. Take him away.
This is the Paying Attention radio program.
This is Wilfredo LaBoy, and I'm listening to the Paying Attention program.
Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to the same old place that you left back. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained and they've turned around. Who you thought they'd lead you?
Who you thought they'd lead you?
Back here where we need you.
Back here where we need you.
Yeah, we tease him a lot, cause we got him on the spot. Welcome back.
978-454-4980 here on the Paying Attention radio program.
Caught up
on WCAP. We are back here on WCAP, and I don't know if our show is going to move, if we're going to stay. I'm just happy to be here. I don't care if they play me at 2 in the morning. I really don't.
So we're at 12 to 2 now. We might be at another time slot.
Another time, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows? Well, but for now, this is where we are, and we're happy to be here. And I actually would like to have them rerun my show at like 1 or 2 in the morning.
It just does a continuous loop every 2 hours?
No. Just okay. like 1 or 2 in the morning every once in a while to run it, because they're running satellite programming anyway.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who are looking for intellectual stimulation at night. I got to tell you, at night, other than The Bachelor Show, there's no intellectual stimulation on radio at all.
If you want intellectual stimulation, just listen to Tom Duggan.
Yeah, absolutely.
No question.
And it's not because of me. It's the people that I bring into the show. Trust me. I have nothing to do with anything intellectual on this program.
Being facetious, actually.
978-454-4980. Nobody on the phone line.
So nope, nice and quiet over here.
We're going to move to yesterday, Paul. I had quite the honor to be. Can you put up the clip that says EPA in that folder?
I'm turning light green right now, and you're just in the you're just in the beginning of the sentence.
Right? Yeah.
Yes.
So I spent.
Whenever you're ready, Tom.
I spent about a half an hour
interviewing
Newt Gingrich yesterday at the Radisson Hotel in Manchester, New Hampshire. Newt Gingrich has always been a hero of mine, regardless of what Todd thinks. And, and when I got the call
government
from Alex...
Government shutdown what?
When I got the call from Alex, I really thought that it just wasn't going to happen. Mm. Like, the last minute we were going to get a call that his plane was late or stuff. So I called Christine Morabito, who's our Tea Party columnist at the Valley Patriot, who is my new partner in crime on these things, now that Paula is no more. And she was all excited. And then I thought, geez, if we're going to be alone with him in a room at his hotel,
yes,
maybe I'll bring my daughter.
How about a chaperone?
Which is my daughter. So I said, maybe I'll bring my daughter, because I'm sure she'd like to meet Newt Gingrich.
Now, is your daughter politically astute? Does she follow?
And our very first 2 or 3 discussions on the phone, where she was a Ron Paul supporter.
Yeah, she's a Paul butt.
Yeah, not anymore. And I think meeting Newt Gingrich pretty much put an end to that. And I kept telling her, no, it's got to be Romney or Gingrich. It's got to be Romney or Gingrich. And she was, no, she was a Paul butt. And so we would debate and discuss. I think like one night we were on the phone for 3 hours discussing Ron Paul. Yeah, she's very politically active. She watches the news. She reads newspapers.
She was very excited about this potentiality.
She's extremely excited about the And I think walking into yesterday's event, or whatever you want to call it, yesterday's interview, I think she was really leaning toward Mitt Romney. And I didn't ask her afterwards, but I kind of got the impression by the time we were done, she was a Newt Gingrich supporter.
So your daughter went from Ron Paul to Mitt Romney and now Newt Gingrich, maybe.
I think. I can't say for sure, because I want to have her on the show at some point.
What does a three-hour discussion about Ron Paul cover exactly?
Well, she was a Ron Paul supporter. I hate Ron Paul. Like, I'll support Obama before I will support Ron Paul. And I don't know if anybody saw the Saturday Night Live skit that they did on Ron Paul, where the moderator asked him, if you were walking down the street and there was a house on fire and there were puppies in the window with their noses pressed up against the glass going, would you save them? And the Ron Paul guy says, not my business. Let the puppies die. It's not my business. And, you know, even though that was a Saturday Night Live skit, they encapsulated in that one 30-second part of that skit exactly Ron Paul's foreign policy. If the Iranians are going to nuke the Jews in Israel, not my business. Let the Jews die. If a dictator or a tyrant somewhere else in the country wants to drop bombs on people or gas their own people or torture their own people, not my business. Let them die. And so I really despise, not him as a person. I'm sure he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
But his position on foreign policy, I so loathe and despise because he's not a conservative. I don't care what anyone says.
No, I'm
he's not a conservative at all.
I'm thinking that voice
he's
is
a sissy boy isolationist is what he is.
A sissy boy isolationist.
Kind of like Paul, but I don't want to get him upset.
Now, let me be honest. Now, I'm not a big Ron Paul person either, but he's a sissy boy isolationist because he believes other countries' problems are their own problems.
I think when you are the strongest guy on the block and you see other people on the block being bullied and hurt and harmed, you have a moral responsibility to your fellow man to do something to help them.
Okay.
Which is why I didn't necessarily support the amount of money, the billions of dollars that George Bush sent to Africa for AIDS vaccines, but I supported the program.
Yep.
I mean, I didn't support how much he was spending, but if we have all of these vaccines in this country and the money to buy them and help people who are dying in a desert somewhere else, I have no problem helping them.
Do you take into account the fact that we had to take a loan from some other country because we actually don't have that money and then turn around and send that aid someplace else?
That's why I had a problem with the amount.
Because that's the issue that I have with most aid that we're giving to other countries we have to go take loans to give away the money that we're taking loans on. It doesn't make sense. Yeah. We may be the strongest, richest, most powerful nation on the earth because we have the largest credit card.
Yes.
But that doesn't necessarily mean we could just keep giving our money away.
Right. No, I agree with that. But I guess what I'm saying is I don't believe, as the Ron Paul bots believe, that nothing is our business unless it directly affects us.
Mm-hmm.
If the Iranians and the Libyans and the Lebanese and the Syrians and the Saudi Arabians are mounting war and the Egyptians are mounting war against Israel and they're our ally, we ought to be over there bombing them. Mm-hmm. We ought to be over there doing something to stop that because Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. Think about this. Arab women have more rights in Israel than they have in any Muslim-run country in the Middle East. Arab women, Muslim women, Muslim women have more rights in Israel than they do in any Muslim-run country. And Israel is the only country that I know of that feeds its enemies, provides electricity for its enemies, provides water for its enemies, and provides plumbing for its enemies who are trying to wipe them off the face of the earth. Paul? Seemed like you wanted to say something.
No, it's okay. He's pondering.
You're on a roll.
All right. So anyway, so I interviewed Newt Gingrich yesterday. I was a little disappointed in two of his answers.
Hmm.
Not what he said, but really kind of what he didn't say. I did ask him, do you consider yourself the most pro-Israel candidate for president? And he balked at that. He didn't answer it. He gave me a great dissertation on his position on national security. He gave me a great recitation on the Middle East and the growing Muslim threat. And all of those were great things. But my question was, and had he been anyone else, I would have made him answer the question.
Of course. But he's Newt Gingrich.
But it was Newt Gingrich. What am I going to...
My childhood idol? Am I going to step on his throat?
Yeah, no, I'm not going to do that. I really.
You are clearly not Edward R. Murrow.
Listen, I really debated it, though. I have to tell you.
All right.
Like, while he's answering the question, I was almost like, yeah, you're not answering the question. But I had a half an hour with the guy. I just wanted to listen to him talk.
Certainly.
I didn't even want to ask any questions. I just wanted to sit there and listen to him.
Yep.
So I did interview him. I didn't really like his answer on the Sam Meese Act that I'm trying to get passed to have illegal aliens who are here in this country receiving aid from this country, whether it's in our hospitals or free education, to build the home country that they came from for the services that were provided.
Oh, okay.
Remember when Sam Meese was running?
Yeah, I do remember him saying that. Now it's an act?
Yeah, well, no, it will be
okay.
When I'm done.
Oh, okay.
I mean, so I all said right. to him, I said, you know, I said to... Mitt Romney.
Newt.
Uh-oh.
I'm an idiot.
The Newt.
I said to Newt Gingrich, I said, you know, Sam Meese had a great idea when he ran for Congress. He said, let's take all the money that we're spending on illegal aliens in this country. Let's make sure that they have a checkoff box when they go to the emergency room or when they register their kids for school as to what country they come from if they're not here legally. Let's add up what we're spending and charge the home country. And if they don't want to pay it, let's take it out of the billions in financial aid that we're sending them.
Well, what if we're not sending them anything?
Well, we're sending everybody money, unfortunately.
Except me.
Except him.
That's right? How I feel.
And he didn't really seem to like that. He didn't like the Sam Meese Act, which I'm a little befuddled by. But Newt is a guy who thinks out loud like I do.
And that is true.
And I think
that is absolutely true.
Yeah, and it gets us both in trouble.
That's right.
And I think what's going to happen is after the interview, I think he probably is going to think about that. And don't be surprised. Don't be surprised.
Next debate.
If in a subsequent debate, all of a sudden he starts talking about either that or something like that. Because I could see the wheels turning as he was not answering my question initially.
Yes.
I could see the wheels turning in his head that he didn't necessarily not like the idea. He wasn't sure if he liked the idea, but he was giving it a lot of thought, which I really like.
Absolutely.
So, I've got Mark LaPlante on the
line. All right, we'll take Mark LaPlante. Then I'm going to play some clips of my interview with Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich, who's a candidate for president. Warren City Councilor Mark LaPlante, how are you, sir?
Exceptional. How are you?
I'm doing well. I think you're in trouble, though.
In what way?
Well, you got elected, and now you're one of nine, and you got to deal with Willie Lantigua and eight hostile counselors sitting at the table with you.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do the best we can, Tom. I mean, a heck of a victory. I just wanted to call and thank the voters from F. I mean, I was totally surprised. I know I talked to you earlier about it, but very surprised by the number that came out and the outpouring of support. Clearly, you know, they like it the direction that at least that I'm representing them in, and I couldn't be happier. And so I'm going to continue doing what I need to do to represent them really well. But I'm just totally jazzed by the outpouring of support, and it just focuses me to continue to work really hard and do the best job that I can.
Now, I'm going to give you an opportunity most people don't get. I'm going to give you an opportunity to say that I might be wrong. When you were on the show last week, I said you were in trouble. Do you think I was wrong in saying that you were in trouble, that I was incorrect or inaccurate or just not seeing the situation right? Or did something happen since that show that drove people to the polls?
No, I think that you were right. I think that that I could have been in trouble, there's no doubt. And I think that what needed to be done was a culmination of things that needed to take place on that Tuesday. We were working hard up until Tuesday, but if we didn't do what we need to do on Tuesday, which was get out to vote, all the work that took place prior to Tuesday may not have paid dividends. So you may have been right. Had we not done what we were supposed to do, which is get out to vote, make sure the calls are out, up and on the doors, do all the things we needed to do, you know, we could have been in trouble. So, you know, I'm not going to say that you're wrong, Tom.
All right. Well, look, you had your shot.
How about later on, though? Okay, can I just take a mulligan on that?
No, you know, you had one shot, and that's it. You blew it. You blew it, as Happy Gilmore would say. All right, Lawrence City Councilor Michael Pitt, one more question before you go.
Yes, sir.
You're going to have to hit the ground running in January when you get re-sworn in with all of the Willie Lantigua candidates, all nine of them, or all eight of them. I guess there's a dispute on one, but let's just say seven for the sake of argument. How are you going to function sitting with seven Willie Lantiguas sitting next to you?
Well, you know, we can only hope that common sense takes over. There's two, as you know, Tom, there's two different things. One is the nuts and bolts about being the city council, the potholes, the sidewalks, those kinds of things that take place in the district. That's one. I think I'll still be able to get that job done. The second aspect of it is the policy, the votes, the motions, those kinds of things that take place on the council. I don't want to go in thinking that it's not going to work. So I'm going in there upbeat, optimistic that there's a chance that we can make those things work. Factions can work on various issues, and that we can, you know, work toward making some constructive changes that need to take place on the council. So I'm not giving up hope, if that's what you're asking.
Well, you're a braver man than I am, because I've completely given up hope. I really have. Well,
hey, listen, there's no sense in running if there's no hope. So the only reason why some of us go into elect office because we do have at least a desire and a hope that these things can and will change. Because if we went in there thinking that it's not going to happen, then why even bother? Why even waste everybody's time? So well, I'm in there because I think we can make it happen.
All right, Lawrence City Councilor Mark LaPlante, appreciate your call.
Thanks, Tom. Thank you so much.
All right, you're welcome. 978-454-4980. What do we got, Todd?
I have a John McDonald on the line.
John McDonald. John, I don't know if you heard me last week on my very first show back. I started the show with John McDonald, John McDonald, John McDonald, John McDonald.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I just want to welcome you back to the air, my friend.
Thank you so much, John. John, we've been good friends for a long time. I'm heartbroken that you didn't win, but it was your first time out, and I thought it was a pretty darn good showing for a guy who'd never run for office before.
Well, thank you very much. You know, like I say, there's a lot of reasons why it didn't go our way, and it certainly wasn't from a lack of effort, and no one runs by themselves, as you know, Tom. I had a great team, and they were all You know, they were all pretty heartbroken. But you know what? Like you say, it was the first time out, and hey, it is what it is. I very much thank the voters of Lowell that did vote for me, and you know, the other ones will work on that maybe in the future. I don't know, but I just really wanted to call and welcome you back to the air because you put on a great show and you do a lot of good things, and I love you to death. So
well,
you
listen,
know that.
I really appreciate that because I really don't want people to love me, but I do want you to love me. I definitely want you to love me. For sure.
All right, brother. Well, hey, welcome back, and I look forward to many more programs in the future.
All right, thank you very much, John.
Talk to you soon.
John McDonald, former candidate for Lowell City Council. I was really shocked. I actually thought he had a really, really good chance of getting one of those seats. I mean, I'm happy that Joe Mendonca eked out a win. And unfortunately, if John had won, he probably would have knocked out Joe Mendonca. I completely missed that race. I mean,
how many votes did he lose by?
You know? I don't have it in front of me. I don't have it in front of me. But I know that he was not in the top nine. And I know Joe Mendonca just barely made the top nine. And I really thought Joe was going to do far, far better than that. So when the next election comes around, I'm going to have to take off my reporter's hat, get into Lowell, and start helping Joe Mendonca a little bit because we don't want him being, you know, the last guy out next time around. We've got to get him and John McDonald in.
Hasn't he been in for a long time?
I think he got elected. I don't know if this is his first or second term. I'm not sure.
Okay.
I wish I was more up on the Lowell stuff.
He's been in Lowell politics in other positions, though.
He might be.
He's
got me at a disadvantage.
He's been in and out for a while.
I wish I could follow Lowell as much as I follow Lawrence, Methuen, Havel, North Andover, but I don't. But that's going to change because now that we're back, now that we're here, I'll have access to more of that information.
There you go. I am ready, by the way, for you and Newt on the EPA if you're ready for it.
All right. So I interviewed Newt Gingrich yesterday. I brought my my daughter, Justice, with me, and I brought Christine Morabito, our fine Tea Party columnist at the Valley Patriot. And I also brought Christine with me when we interviewed Thaddeus McCotter. Congressman Thaddeus McCotter was also.
Is he still in?
No, he dropped out.
Okay.
He dropped out. And
poor
actually,
Thaddeus.
That's how I met Alex Talcott, who's from Amesbury. He was working on Thaddeus's campaign and got me that interview. So
that's what a shame. I think we need a president named Thaddeus.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool. President Thad.
Thad.
Yeah.
I think that would work.
So I did about a half an hour interview with Newt Gingrich. I'm not going to play the entire interview. I'm going to tease it out because I'm going to transcribe this and make it a big story in the December Valley Patriot. But there's a couple of things that he talked about, one with Occupy Wall Street, one with the EPA, both of which I thought were really good clips, and I wanted you to hear it and discuss it and think about it. So let's listen to his position on the EPA. Now, the question was really by Christine Morabito, and she was talking about an EPA regulation that they tried to do in the Midwest where they were going to prohibit dust on farms. So if there was a stiff wind that day, and it was blowing dust, you couldn't plow your crops, okay?
Because it would make the crops bad.
It would make it would make dust, and
dust
is bad for the environment, right? Like deserts didn't exist before man, right?
Okay.
Just to show you how out of control the EPA is, and here is at least a portion of his answer, which I thought was pretty good. It's called EPA.
Here we go.
The Washington Post wrote this outrageous article that there really wasn't a dust regulation. Well, it wasn't true, and this was EPA propaganda. The EPA under the Clean Air Act has responsibility for particulate matter. Particulate matter is called dust. And they were looking at a regulation that would affect farming by establishing that if the wind was blowing enough that the dust would leave your fields, you shouldn't plow. Okay. Now, so you would talk to farmers who drive down a dirt road, kicking up dust. I mean, it was insane. In Arizona, they're in this fight because Arizona is a desert. And they actually have some areas of Arizona where they want them to water down the dirt so that they don't get these huge dust storms. And the guys, I met with a group of Arizonans who said, we keep trying to explain to the EPA, the reason it's called a desert is there's no water. And you want us to take the water that's there.
You don't have to explain that to the EPA.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it is. I think it's an agency which has, for three generations, self-selected radicals who are anti-business, anti-local control, and who believe in a radical version of environmentalism at any cost. And it's probably, I would say it may be the most destructive anti-manufacturing agency in the federal government. I mean, no other agency has contributed as much to the decay of American manufacturing as EPA has.
So now, nothing can be disputed about what he said, because the fact is they do try to put through these wacky regulations. Nobody's saying that we shouldn't help the environment or that we shouldn't have an EPA. But I think what Newt is saying is that the current structure of the EPA and the current people running the EPA, they're such environmental radicals that they want to protect the environment at any cost, and that includes killing manufacturing jobs in America.
Who works for the EPA? Are they appointed by the president? How does that work?
Yeah, there's a secretary of the EPA that's appointed by the president.
And then under him, they're just hired.
Right. Yeah.
Correct. Okay. It's a job structure. By the way, I do enjoy listening to Newt define words. Particulate matter in the air is called dust.
Yeah, right.
I would have never known that had I not heard that interview. Right, so thank you, Newt, for clarifying that.
Paul would have asked him, now, what other things would be considered particulate matter and how would you define that?
And by the way, I know it is measured in parts per million. I didn't even need Newt to tell me that.
Right. So I thought that was pretty astonishing to hear from a presidential candidate. I mean, he didn't say he'd do away with the EPA, but he certainly went on record saying that, you know, this is an agency of government that is so radicalized and the people running it are so radicalized that it's killing manufacturing jobs. And it's the single most of all the federal government agencies. It's the single agency that's destroying manufacturing in America. Mm-hmm. And what's amazing to me is that the liberals don't get that. The Democrats don't get that.
So you need a Republican president to get rid of the radicals and put in a more conservative EPA? Is that his?
Yeah, to have an EPA that's really going to be concerned with the environment, but not at any cost. In other words, you know, if you're going to build a bridge or a highway, being more concerned with a yellow toad, a yellow-bellied snail, that might have
strike a better balance.
Yeah, let's strike a balance. We could help the environment tomorrow if we just killed all the people.
That's true.
And then there'd be no more
pollution. You know what? There are a lot of people that think that's the solution.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. Most of them are on the far left, but you know, to be honest with you.
And some of my ethics classes too. Yeah. But anyway, the what was I going to say? The three federal agencies that Rick Perry wanted to get rid of, was that one of them?
No,
but somebody was suggesting. They were trying to put words into his mouth. Hey, how about the EPA?
EPA.
And he did say yes, right? Before he said no?
Right. Yeah. Okay. He was for it before he was against it.
That's right.
So he thought it might have been the EPA, but apparently it wasn't.
It wasn't his mind.
I'm not even sure why Rick Perry's in this race.
I think he wasn't sure either. If you would ask, if it was the third thing on that list, he forgot. Oops.
But, I mean, I understand, as a former elected official and someone who's run for office and run tons of campaigns, I get that there are times when you're going to be up on stage or in front of a bunch of people or maybe doing a radio interview where you just get what they call a brain fart.
Yeah.
And you forget. But the problem with Rick Perry is that it happens every time.
You know what? I got one about 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Because when you were doing your Ron Paul impression.
Yes.
I wanted to tell you that sounds much more like Ross Perot than Ron Paul.
Well, let me tell you. If you listen to the two of them together, there's not much difference.
I think there is.
Okay, they look alike.
But anyway, I could not for the life of me remember Ross Perot's name.
Yes.
Until just the past couple of minutes.
There's no question in my mind that Ron Paul hates this country so much that if he loses the primary.
That's absurd. That's absurd.
That if he loses the primary, which he's going to, thank God. That he's going to run as an independent candidate and help Barack Obama get reelected.
I don't think Ron Paul hates this country. I don't think you think he hates this country. I just think that you disagree with his foreign policy.
Well, he's like 100% right on most of his fiscal policies. Mm. And the scary thing is he's 100% wrong on all of his foreign policy. He doesn't want to build a wall between us and Mexico. He thinks that we should let the Jews get killed. He doesn't think that we should be fighting any war anywhere else.
Well, in that respect, you should say that Ron Paul hates other countries, maybe. But I don't think we can say that he hates this country, no?
Ron Paul believes that the biggest problem in the world is the United States. He is no different than Tennis Lilly and the people who are left-wing progressives.
That. I think Barack Obama thinks. I think Barack Obama and his gang think that. But I don't think Ron Paul thinks that.
Between the two of them, Barack Obama is conservative on foreign policy.
On foreign policy.
Compared to Ron Paul.
Compared to Ron Paul. That's right. And he's more neoconservative than Ron Paul is.
And the only guy in the race who really has the most foreign policy understanding, the best foreign policy understanding, is Newt Gingrich. I mean, here's a guy who truly understands national
security.
He
understands everything.
He really does. He really does. I
say again, except how to keep a government functioning as opposed to shut down.
Well, you know, there's a function in shutting the government down.
I think that's probably the best thing that happened to the government is to shut
the government down twice.
I was all for that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
But you talk for the poor people that rely on the government for, I don't know, there aren't that many. Oh, there aren't that many?
Yeah. Well, there shouldn't be that many.
I'm not even talking about the people that rely on them for checks. I'm talking about the people that are employed by the government who were unfortunately stuck at home because of it.
Can you queue up the Gingrich Tea Party clip?
Yes, I am. As long as this computer's ready to go, we've got it.
All right. So one of the other questions that Christine Morabito, who really had much better questions than I did, one of the other questions that she asked was about the comparison between Occupy Wall Street and the Tea Party.
Yeah.
I thought this was a fascinating answer here on WC.
You've been very supportive of the Tea Party from the beginning. This Occupy Wall Street movement that's popped up has been compared to the Tea Party. I know you disagree with that, the comparison.
Well, sure. Look, I mean, there is no comparison. The Tea Party people were almost all committed to a stronger, better America. They're almost all committed to studying, to learning the Constitution, to learning the Declaration of Independence. They're almost all actually positive in their attitudes. They're angry, but they're trying to direct their angry to a positive outcome. The Wall Street groups strike me as breaking into two groups. One which I can sympathize with are people who are just in pain and who are angry and who are saying, you know, why does Goldman Sachs get billions of dollars and I lose my home? Well, I think that's not a bad question. You know, I think that's classic populism. But the other element in the Occupy Wall Street group is a nihilist, anti-civilization thuggery of people who are astonishingly arrogant. And I said this the other night in the debate, and I think I surprised some people. I said, you know, why doesn't a reporter go up to them and say, why do you think everybody else owes you a park that you can live in? Why do you think you ought to have the right to use somebody else's bathroom? Why do you, I mean, you know, there's been vandalism recently because a hot dog stand in San Diego that had been nice to them decided it couldn't afford it anymore, and so they trashed the place. I mean, so I think there's a really childish temper tantrum part of this, and their intellectual framework is left-wing, you know, and I think we have never been clear enough about this with Obama. Obama is a Saul Alinsky radical. He preaches class warfare. He is the natural step towards the hostile parts of the Occupy Wall Street because he basically preaches these people over here who are successful are bad.
Mm-hmm.
Well, guess what? The President of the United States tells that to a group. He's dividing America.
Right.
That's why I tell people, I'm for the 100%.
I like that.
Okay.
That's good.
I think, and you know, you say, do you identify with the 99%, the 1%? The answer is, for an American, the answer ought to be, I'm for the 100%.
Right.
Because we're all Americans.
Right.
It is a European radical concept to suggest that we can be divided. Mm-hmm. And to suggest that Henry Ford, when he was a young man, was in the 99%, but Henry Ford, when he invented modern automobiles, was in the 1%.
Mm-hmm.
So the guy who put all of us on wheels is bad. You know, Bill Gates, who put all of us, you know, on Windows, is bad. Mm-hmm. Steve Jobs, who got all of us to use iPhones, is bad.
If you could lump us in with them in the next debate, we'd love that. Because we started with nothing.
All right, that's why, I mean, you guys are a good example. Yeah. I mean, you know.
So what do you think? What do you think, Paul? Occupy Wall Street, they're a bunch of thugs, and they really don't understand the concept of property rights, really, is what he was saying. Somebody else's bathroom, you don't have a right to. If there's no businesses to pay for your park, then you have no park to protest.
That's right. I think it was a very good analysis. I think that he hit the nail on the head in as much as perhaps half of this movement, I think, is a misery loves company movement. We're miserable, and we'd like to make everyone else
right.
Come along with us.
Right. And I think Winston Churchill is the one who said that, you know, socialism is really the sharing of misery for everybody. And instead of, you know, bringing people up, it brings people down.
I don't even know what these people want. I don't think they know what they want.
Well,
they want to get out there and say, we're miserable and we hate everybody.
Right. It's not what they want. It's what they don't want. What they don't want is other people making more money than them, which to me was always capitalism. I mean, communism. Mm. Or maybe socialism in some form. But really, if you're an Occupy Wall Street person who's part of that whole, and I think it's more than 50-50. I think it's really kind of 70-30.
I'd like to take a poll with them and say, what exactly is your aim? You know, you're here, you're protesting, fine. You're an American.
Yeah, but
what exactly is the goal? What's the end?
If you interview 100 people, you're going to get 100 different answers. That's the problem. There really is no one issue that they
then call it a party. Don't call it a protest.
Yeah. Yeah. Other than they hate people who have more money than them. They complain about the TARP bailouts of the banks. But let's remember, the TARP bailouts of the banks was a loan to the banks that the banks paid back with interest. So we made money on that. And everyone complains that, well, they gave their CEOs bonuses. So what? We made money too. Everybody made money on that transaction.
Yeah, except
how
the people that lost their
thing?
Houses, though. The people that lost their houses, they didn't make any money. Their houses are gone.
Well, people lost their houses because they bought houses they couldn't afford. And they were able to buy houses they couldn't afford because Bill Clinton and the Bill Clinton Congress, which at some point was Republican, they pushed through a measure that forced the banks, didn't allow them, but it forced the banks to make loans to people who couldn't afford it in the name of racial unity. We're going to allow blacks and Latinos to buy houses they can't afford, and nobody thought of or cared about the fact that 5 years from now they were all going to lose those homes.
And you don't believe that the banks, in an interest to make a profit, were complicit in making those loans? They have no fault there? They were forced to make those loans?
They were forced to make the loans, and they lost money, which is why we had to bail them out. I mean, the Fed basically said to these banks, we don't care if you've got a black or a Latino sitting in front of you and they want to buy a house and they can't afford the mortgage, give them the loan anyway, because more blacks and more Latinos should own homes. And that was the liberal philosophy behind it. And so the banks had no choice. And so the banks said, fine, we're going to make these loans. And they made the loans and lost money. And then when they lost money, we had to bail them out.
Just to defend Todd, I don't think that the banks could have not said no.
That's correct.
I think they could have said, hey, you know, that's a nice ideal, but it wouldn't work. And this is why it wouldn't work.
Not to mention owning a home is, you know, I mean, $100,000 could get you a fairly nice home if you don't have one versus a $500,000 home, which you may have gotten qualified for a loan for when they were just giving money away.
Right, so the problem is that they gave too many loans to too many people.
Right.
Okay. So then the government is at fault and perhaps the banks are at fault. So these Occupy people, they're there with their signs and they're complaining, but I want to know what they're complaining about and what their idea is to make it better.
Yeah, well,
that's all I want to know. With the Tea Party, you can tell it's very easy. Stop taxing people so much.
Right.
Okay. Give me the message that these guys are unified on. What is it?
I don't think there is one. Other than they hate capitalism. They hate the fact that other people can make more money than them.
All right, then I think that they should unify in trying to overthrow the government or something. I mean, if they're going to be honest and consistent, right?
Well, I think that is the goal. I think that is the goal of most of the people at OWS. I think it really is to take down our financial system, to make all of those evil rich people pay and be poor again, and to take down our financial system.
And replace it with what?
Well, who cares?
It doesn't matter.
Well, they're anarchists.
Okay. I mean, so it doesn't matter.
Obviously, they don't care. I mean, look at the number of rapes, the number of drug arrests that have been made, the amount of drugs look at all the crime in and of itself. Not just against the police and the vandalism, but among other Occupy Wall Street protesters. I mean, they're killing each other off.
But that happens at any time you get large batches of people together. I mean, heck, that stuff happened at Woodstock, and I wasn't even old enough to be around for it.
But it doesn't happen at Tea Party meetings. It doesn't happen. It didn't happen when Martin Luther King stood in Washington, D.C. and made that speech among a crowd of millions of people.
Certainly.
That didn't have that. But with this element, you do, because you're talking about the lowest class of people in the country who are going out all pissed off that there's a higher class of people who worked their rear ends off and made more money than them.
But they're not all low-class people. But we have somebody that wants to speak to us on the issue. We've got Mark from Lowell on the line.
All right, Mark from Lowell, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good, Mark. Thank you for calling.
Great. A couple of things. First, on Joe Mendonca.
Yes.
He used to be at one time on the Lowell School Committee.
Right.
That was it.
And then he did run for those. He did run for the city council. He had missed it. He came in 10th, and then he was able to become a city council on someone's retirement. And I forgot who. And then he got elected on his own.
Right. And then he just barely got elected in that 9th spot last week, right?
Yeah, but I mean, that was a re-election. But prior to that, he had been on the city council for about a year.
Well, thank you, Carl. You answered the question that we couldn't remember.
Yeah, and the other thing that I want to call about is what you were just talking about regarding home ownership. there's programs from both the Department of Planning and Development in Lowell and Merrimack Valley Housing Partnership that allow you, as well as I believe the Coalition for a Better Acre, they have programs for home ownership. And it's not just for the African Americans or the Asian Americans or Latino Americans, but it's for everybody. And the, also low interest rates, the mortgages, that have happened to have been a part of that situation at the time where people could afford homes. But the other thing, too, is when you do appraisal valuations of property and your property values go up, you can sell your houses for, you know, triple what they're probably worth, and that person can, you know, get a mortgage at a very low interest rate, and that's how they can own homes. I mean, that's everybody's ideal, is to own a home. And you can't, in Lowell, you're not going to be able to own a home if there's not enough housing, if there's not enough land for a house, right, because of zoning requirements. So I just thought I'd bring those matters up. Nice to have you back on the show.
All right, listen, I appreciate your call. Thank you so much.
Yeah,
right.
Call back sometime.
All right.
All right. We even get Lowell people calling in. How about that?
Well, I think we are in Lowell, Tom.
Yeah, I know, yeah. But I still...
Is that where we are this morning?
Yeah.
Is that where we are? We're in Lowell this morning?
That's where we're at.
I got it.
Yeah. I actually got emails, even after I begged last week for people not to email me about this.
Yeah.
I actually got emails last week from people in Lowell saying, why are you talking about Lawrence? It's a Lowell radio station. I've been here for 7 years.
Right.
Actually, 8 years minus a year that we were off. And I beg people all the time because here's the answer. Again, if you're living in Lowell, why do we talk about Lawrence on a Lowell station? You're paying for it. That's why. That's why. When Lowell's talking about laying off cops, look at all the millions and millions and millions of dollars being pumped into Lawrence. It's
and
being
millions.
Wasted. And millions.
Yes.
The Lawrence budget is somewhere around 200 and I'm really bad at numbers, but it's about 200.
But you know what?
A lot of these million.
A lot of these folks, they live in Lowell and they don't, you know, they don't follow the ins and outs of politics of Lawrence, the Methuen area.
Right.
So they don't really know the players, and they're not all that familiar with it.
So stay tuned to the Paying Attention Radio program, and we will school you on what's going on in the surrounding communities, because you really shouldn't be Lowell-centric if you live in Lowell. And if you live in Methuen, you shouldn't be Methuen-centric. Or if you live in North Andover, you shouldn't be North Andover-centric. You really need to know what the other communities are doing, because there might be some great ideas that Board of Selectmen come up with to handle a problem that Lowell is currently facing, and maybe you can piggyback on that. Maybe you can take that idea and change it a little to help Lowell a little bit more. And so you have to pay attention to what's going on in your surrounding communities, because if you live in Lowell, if you live in Methuen, the world is not Methuen. If you live in Lowell, the world is not Lowell. You really need to know what's going on in these other communities, and we're going to try and help provide that.
I think Lawrence is kind of looked at as the ugly stepsister.
Yeah.
You know,
stepchild.
Yeah, okay. There, you know, she's alive. We've got to coexist with her, but I don't want to hear too much about her.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Lowell has gone through a lot in the past, you know, generation.
Yeah.
With what it's done, and it doesn't want to be brought down.
Right. Well, the reason Lowell, I think, has succeeded and Lawrence has not succeeded in the last 20 years is because Lowell had a guy named
Tsongas,
and Lawrence at the time had a guy named Chet Atkins, and I think that really says it all. I mean, they were both Democrats, but very, very different Democrats. Chet Atkins wanted as many social programs pumped into Lawrence, as many liberal experimental social programs in Lawrence, and Tsongas didn't. Tsongas wanted to build Lowell, and Atkins wanted to make Lawrence the social program mecca of
New England. If my memory is correct, by the time Paul Tsongas died, he was a very conservative Democrat.
Yeah, he was on a lot of issues.
And he gave Bill Clinton a run for his money.
Yeah, he did.
He was on the right of Bill Clinton during the Democratic process of president in 1992.
I'm bad with years, so I'm going to take your word for it. You can stop playing Shakira. We'll take it.
Sounds good. We're ready to go when you are.
978-454-4980. You can hear more of my interview and Christine Morbido's interview with Newt Gingrich next week. We also did videotaping. So once the December edition comes out, we're going to post the entire videotape of the 30-minute interview with Newt, who by then will be the front runner, I believe. And boy, did Mitt Romney, I don't want to hurt a fellow Republican, because he might be the nominee.
But
boy, did his people screw up when they decided not to allow us to interview him for the presidency. Back after this.
I'm, by the way, Tom.
Sure.
I'm an outsider. I don't owe anybody anything.
I don't know we can accept that answer, Mr. Rachel, with all due respect. How are you an outsider? You were Bill Clinton's Secretary of Labor.
Well, Secretary of Labor of the United States, but I wasn't on Beacon Hill. I have no career on Beacon Hill. I don't owe anybody anything.
Okay. All right, then.
Mr. Limbaugh would say. This is Mitt Romney.
This is Robert Reich.
This is State Auditor Joe DiNucci.
This is Warren Tolman.
This is Steve Grossman.
And you're listening.
You're listening to the Paying Attention radio program.
Paying Attention.
If you want to be somebody, if you want to go somewhere, you better wake up and pay attention.
Alrighty, wrapping up the show today. Can't believe it's almost over. The Valley Patriot is on the streets. It's being delivered as we speak. I know Dan is out there. Dan also called. He's one of my drivers. He said his children are in the North Andover Public Schools. Another letter went out last week telling parents to support a certain measure at town meeting so they can build a roof. And again, I'm not against building roofs
on what?
Schools.
On school. Okay.
Yeah, on a school, yeah. I'm not against building roofs on schools. I just don't think that the school department should be using public dollars to be campaigning for such issues. 978-454-4980. I love that Robert Reich clip. I get all the best guests.
He was good.
He was good.
I remember him on.
You know, I've met the Bush twins. I spent 2 hours hanging out, thanks to Jack Roy and Haverhill. I spent 2 hours hanging out with Dick Morris one night at Sal's, and we just kind of drank and chatted about politics.
I remember that
great
night.
Great. Yeah. I met Obama last year. I told him Sergeant Crowley says hi, which I don't think he liked all that much. Mm. I met Bill Clinton back in 1991 at the police memorial, which also probably didn't go all that well. But
this job has its perks.
I got to tell you, meeting Newt Gingrich was probably the best get so far.
So, Tom, I would imagine that you are now supporting Newt Gingrich.
Yeah, I think that I am. I mean, I'm not ready to take the 100% plunge. I really need to.
I think that's a mistake.
You think it's a mistake?
I do.
See, I want to go with Romney, but here's my problem with Romney. Now, the WCAP signal goes far into New Hampshire, all the way up into Manchester where my daughter lives because she listens
yes.
to us.
Yes.
We can affect an awful lot of votes for any candidate that comes on, whether people end up liking them or not liking them based on our interviews.
So you are now supporting Newt Gingrich because you had an interview with him. And you can't interview Romney.
No. I'm not supporting Romney because he refused to do an interview with the Valley Patriot and WCAP, given the fact that we have a far reach into New Hampshire and we've been supporters. I mean, when someone's been your supporter, you don't slap them in the face. And I kind of feel like we've been slapped in the face. And I love Mitt Romney. I really do. And I think he probably right
I'm
now
surprised.
Has a better shot of beating Obama than anybody. But how do I support a guy who doesn't care enough about the people at the grassroots level to sit down and have a conversation with them?
I'm surprised you're taking this personally, number one.
No, it's not personal.
I think
because if he's doing it to me, you know all the other people who supported him and who work in the media.
I don't know that.
We don't know anything, though.
I don't know who
you said
doing
on the show that you really can't know. Anyway.
He could be doing maybe he just wants to press the flesh and meet people in person and do it that way. But I think that's the reason why you want to is because the exact reason you gave about a half hour ago, and that is who is the person who is most probable to beat Barack Obama next year.
Yeah,
and I think that's Mitt Romney.
I think you're probably right. I think
Newt
right
has,
now,
Newt has too many negatives, and he doesn't have the charisma and the presidential look enough to beat Barack Obama.
Really?
I know what people vote for.
See,
and,
I think,
and image
I,
has a lot to do with
I
it.
I think Newt can beat Obama. I think Romney has a better chance,
yes,
at least right now, of
I
beating
agree.
Obama.
I agree.
But that can change. I mean, if you just look at the fact that it was Romney and another candidate, and then that other candidate had problems. The media pushed that other candidate aside, and then it was Romney and Kane. And then Perry gets into the race, and it's Romney and Perry.
Well, first
and then
it was
Perry's
Romney
out of the
Pulaski.
And now it's Romney and Newt. It's clear that the Republicans have a serious problem with Romney, and I think it's that standoffishness where he kind of treats his own very badly.
But I think a lot of independents and non-left-wing Democrats who the Republican candidate needs – I don't think they're going to go to Newt. I think Newt has too many negatives.
Yeah. But really, does anybody have more negatives than Obama? At this point, I really think anybody but Ron Paul could beat Barack Obama. I just agree with you that Romney probably now has the best chance, but I also think that can change.
I don't think there are two things that you can't have, a lightning rod
and somebody who doesn't look presidential. And unfortunately, and because I like Gingrich better than Romney, as a matter of fact, but I don't think he can win.
Do you not believe, though, that the party, especially the Republican Party, has a problem, that they don't have a unifying factor? Do you guys feel maybe that your party's a little bit all over the map in that you have the Tea Party and you have the conservatives and then you have the old time Republicans? Are you a little all over the map? Can you get one of those candidates to unify them? Any of the choices that are out there?
First of all, when you say your party, I've never been a Republican my whole life.
You're talking to me, but I'm
a Republican. Okay, you're a Republican, Tom. But
I'm unenrolled, by the way.
Same here. But I don't think that we're any more splintered than the Democrats are. I think you have far left Democrats. I think you have conservative Democrats.
They unified against what they can.
I think you have FDR Democrats. I don't know how unified they are with Obama. Do you think all of them are going to vote for Obama?
Well, I don't think all of anybody does anything. I think a majority will.
I think many minorities are going to vote for Obama.
90%.
I think many college students will vote for Obama.
Another 90%.
In those who are socialist leaning. But other than that, I don't know who's going to vote for Obama.
Yeah. I know that in a city like Lawrence, in a state like Massachusetts, they're going to go D down the ticket. They're going to go Obama. And this is what I was trying to get to with Richard Tesei. You know, Richard Tesei is going to be running for Congress in a year where Obama's at the top of the ticket.
Certainly.
And in Massachusetts, especially in communities like Lawrence, they're going to go D down the ticket.
Yep.
I mean, Frank Cousins is probably, you know, it doesn't really give me any pleasure to say this. I don't like the guy, but Frank Cousins is probably the most popular sheriff that we've ever had in Essex County. Mm. And when he ran for re-election 4 years ago, whatever it was, he won every single community in Essex County except Lawrence, where he got beat. And he got beat bad because they went D down the ticket.
You know what we're doing right now, Tom? We're trying to get an understanding of who's the best candidate to win the presidency, and where. Comparing it to the voters of Massachusetts.
Yes.
That's bizarre. That's crazy. There's no other state like Massachusetts in the country.
There's a couple.
Well, maybe one or two. Maryland, maybe. But there are, I mean, this is not a good state to compare as to who the best candidate is.
But the question is, is there a Republican candidate out there now that can unify the party like Obama did in his election to get himself to where he is? Can any of the Republican candidates you guys see out there right now unify the party enough, given the different factions that exist, to get a majority?
I don't think you need a unifying force like Obama was 4 years ago because of who we're running against, Obama today.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the unifying force.
Okay.
That's the biggest unifying factor.
I think people are voting for Obama or against Obama. They're voting for the Republican candidate.
And I think Mitt Romney can siphon enough votes from the conservative Democrats and the independents. And I think most Republicans will definitely be against Obama. And there you have it.
No concern about Romney, the perpetual candidate? Doesn't it appear like he is always the perpetual candidate? The guy that, well, I'll run again this year.
Yeah.
I'll run again this year.
Look, I think whatever you can say bad about Romney, you can say far worse about Obama. So if it's the two of them, I don't think his flip-flopping is going to be much of an issue because Obama, remember, came into office promising to close Gitmo.
Mm-hmm.
How'd that work out for you? You know what I'm saying? So whatever it is that the mainstream media after the primaries are over can say about Romney that's negative, boy, I'll tell you, the negatives on the other side are far worse. You know? And I don't think we need to be – I think it's actually good for the party to have this kind of vetting and having all of these candidates and having all of these ideas, these multiple debates. I think it's great, and I think when it's over, whoever our nominee is, as long as it's not Ron Paul, I think they are going to coalesce behind him. And I think, look, if there was one or two Lincoln-Douglas-style debates between Newt Gingrich and Barack Obama, Obama's toast.
I think Gingrich would be a great vice presidential candidate.
I think
because he's not a good figurehead. I think Romney would be the great figurehead, but Gingrich can be the lightning rod.
We got to run. I think Gingrich Kane would be a great, great ticket. But that's just me. Want to say hi to my Cherokee princess, Penny, who's listening at work today. My daughter Justice, I love you both. 978-454-4980 is the number to call. And next week we'll podcast the show in case you missed any of it. Thank you, Paul, for coming in. Todd, great job doing the board today. Appreciate that as well.
Enjoyed it.
We missed Jackie B. Hopefully he'll be back next week. And Timmy Bowmill and all the other guys here at CAP. Appreciate you bringing me back.